Hey guys, Jeff here. Just wanted to pop in real quick before the episode starts to let you know that this is an episode. The audio was taken from BergQuest in Williamsburg over the weekend. And me, Charlie, and our friend James from Tabletop Misfits were guest panelists talking about homebrew and world building. I hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you for listening to the Storycrafters. This episode of the Storycrafters is brought to you by Firelight Fables Candle Company, where the sense, environment, and feeling of a dungeon, forest, cave, or wherever you're adventuring come to life at your table. You can go to www.firelightfables.com to use code STORYCRAFTERS for 15% off your order. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Act natural.
Is that possible for us?
Okay, it is that time.
That's why I said it's that time. That's that why is. When you slapped, it was like, oh,
yeah. It
like,
actually did. That was at 10:30. That was not intentional. Don't forget to use the mics.
Okay.
Because it'll take up burn.
Hello. Can you all hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Well, welcome, everyone. As you can see, we are here for One Does Not Simply Homebrew an Entire World. My name is Charlie. I'm the Inc. GM. We have Jeff of Jeff Rogers Gaming.
We're Hello.
Co-hosts on the Storycrafters podcast. And then we have a wonderful guest, James of Tabletop Misfit. But that being said, we'll kind of introduce ourselves real quick, tell you guys what we do in the TTRPG space. And then from there, we'll give you our top tips and tricks. And then the big thing we want to do is open this up for questions. Because we can talk all day long about homebrew, but we would much rather be able to answer questions about your specific homebrew or questions you have about it, so we can give you guys the best information. And then also, we are recording this for the podcast as well, so don't worry about taking any notes. You can get the whole thing right over there if you need it.
Listen to it again.
But that being said, we are going to start with Jeff, if you could introduce yourself, please.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jeff. I am a GM for primarily Dungeons & Dragons, and I take a slot into the hobby as a more painter aspect of it. I really enjoy like the painting aspect of the models. And the storytelling, I think if you're a GM, everyone knows storytelling, but then everyone kind of has their little spots that they kind of like to do a lot. And I really like painting and making fun little scenes with stuff, so I'm very visual with my storytelling, and that's kind of what I'm doing. And I've never done this before, so I don't know what I'm doing up here anyway, so you'll have to bear with me as I flub through some of this stuff at first, so something to take us for real.
Hello everyone, so I'm Charlie, the Ink GM. I do professional game mastering, and just been a game master for a while now. I love homebrew. Love it. Whatever mechanics, my personal preference is for my players, whatever mechanics they're preferential to. We tend to use D&D 5e. It's just the most easily and commonly accessible right now. But that being said, all my stuff takes place in a homebrew world that I have, and absolutely love it.
And I'm the guest of this thing, which apparently somehow it snuck me onto the podcast without saying I'm going on the podcast. That was a trick I need to work on. So I'm Tabletop Misfits. I'm a variety gaming streamer, professional game master, game designer, writer, anything in the TTRPG space I've at least dabbled in. But here, this is a space where if the mechanics are not out there, we try to find a way to get those into it. And I think that's going to be a fun conversation to have, because for myself, D&D is kind of went to the wayside over the last 2 years. So I've played a lot of different other mechanics and found that it's really fun to try to add Dungeons & Dragons lore, things like that, to other games. And that's been an interesting way to homebrew. So
yeah. Oof.
Well, Jeff, I think we'll just go right back to you if you want to kick it off with some of your hot tips and tricks.
Oh, God.
You want to ask us questions? He's like, throw this at us. Go.
Man. So one thing for, since we all homebrew, we all have a homebrew world. I have a world that I built that's called Ugratha. It's kind of take a turn on like a steampunky Tolkien. So at first it started as like a fantasy world, and it, as time went on, dwarven culture and that kind of steampunk vibe aesthetic kind of began to take over. And one of the things that kind of triggered that for me that I found is a good bouncing board to create homebrew world is to start small for one thing, but like one shots. Taking a one shot setting and then you have a story in that, and from there you can take that and you can take it in a tavern, a city that you're in, and take that one shot and use the events that happen in that one shot in your world building, so you have a history that's already been established in your world by playing that mission, that adventure, whatever you want to do for it. And that's something that I have used quite a lot to help make the world feel alive. Because you can go into a world a lot of times and it's like, oh, there's one shots here and there. There's different adventures that happen, but they all kind of feel like different one little one-offs that don't really connect to anything. But if you use that and you tie it into your world and use that as your history in your world, suddenly that, if a player asks, oh, what happened in there? You might have that on the map and you don't have to come up with history because you've already done it in a one shot. And you can just kind of, you've got a piece of lore right off the top of your head. So that's something that I do quite a lot. But we have quite a few other things too. So. I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay.
You're doing great, buddy. You're doing great. So first off, I could just get a poll of hands in the air. How many people find homebrewing difficult or daunting or exhausting?
Yeah.
I'm going to look at you guys for when we're doing the Q&A portion to hopefully throw your hands up quickly. So my biggest tip when it comes to that is simply do what you love. That's it. Focus your homebrew on content and the type of material and things that make you excited to be at the table, whether no one shows up or not. That's the best thing I can tell you. And that will prevent so much burnout. If you are doing content and you're doing your sessions and making material and making lore and NPCs just to make your players happy or try to cater to them, you're stealing a whole portion of what they're there to experience, which is collaborative storytelling. So you make what you love and then let them mess with it during the session. That's it. That's the simplest way I can put it to just keep yourself from being burnt out and motivated and really enjoy making your homebrew content. A little bit about mine. My homebrew world is, the thematic element is called Adventures After an Arcane Apocalypse. And the reason I went in that route is not because I wanted just strictly a post-apocalyptic setting. It's actually 500 years after the Arcane Apocalypse. What I wanted was a rich world that had anything the players could possibly want to delve into be available. I love D&D and its history. And when you look at the Dungeon Master's Manual, no matter what edition you look at, it says it encourages homebrewing. It, even though they have all their lore and everything else, they encourage you to homebrew. And they simply say, if you want to homebrew, pick an element that you enjoy from some degree of media, you know, whether it's novel writing or a podcast or a movie. Pick what you like and then build around that theme. But when I read that, I immediately was like, well, but that's not the world we live in, and that's not the world that I would want to run as a GM. It's not just this homogeneous environment. It is a rich tapestry of so many histories and lived experiences. And so to make a world around one aspect of it, I was like, that's not going to feel real to me. And I want to be able to bring a world that does feel real and that I'm just as excited about to play in as the, you know, the NPCs, the environment, the monsters for my players, as much as they're excited to sit at that table and do the same thing.
Like that. And I'm going to be that person that changes things completely, because that's what I do, everything I do. For me, my biggest tip for anybody is steal what's out there. There is nothing in the world anymore that is original. It's coming from somewhere. It's coming from mythology. It's coming from movies, games, those types of things.
That's a point.
And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, but I'm going to say this in a way. I want to give you a challenge, though. If you're going to steal something, find one element and just twist it a little bit. So maybe, like he's saying, he's Tolkien-based with the dwarves and things like that. But then he's like, but, you know, let's add some punk to it. You know, let's add some steam to it. Yeah. And now it's no longer that. It's something completely different.
It's relatable, but it's still nostalgia, but foreign at the same time.
Nostalgia is useful because it allows you to understand and have a believability to it, where if you go too far out of the pocket, it starts to become outside of fantasy, because you want your players to react and relate to what you're building in the world. So, and I could do this all day, so I'm going to hand the mic back over and we can start asking questions.
Yeah, so from there, we'd like to open it up to everyone here. So
I've got one other tip that I think.
Okay, I'll pass it off to him, and then after
There's something that I've noticed.
We would just want to open up to any questions, and it can be just think about it as he's talking. Any questions at all about either what we do or what you do, your world, theories, ideas, problems that you run into, anything and everything. There's no wrong or bad question.
Something that I've done lately since my time of GMing that I've found that I don't know if anybody else does this, but it really helps with world building specifically, is at your session zeros, I use Incarnate for my like general map creations. Something that I've learned that does really well that ties the whole table together, like when you're playing, it doesn't even matter what tabletop RPG you're playing, if you have a world that has places in it, we pull up the Incarnate map on the TV and wherever we're at, and if it's a new character that wants to be from somewhere that's not already established in the map, we all sit down, if they want to do it together, we sit down together and we build that area on the map. They help include like what stores are in there, what the history is, what's going on. So it's not just the GM, it's not just me who's making every single decision in the world, but now the players that are creating these areas now have a personal connection to the spot that they've made, because they actually made it. They weren't just given 40 pages of lore on, you know, the city of Ardenvale. Right, like my friend actually was like, hey, I want to be from this place called Ardenvale. It's not on the map. Can we make it? Hell yeah, we can make it. Like, that's awesome. Like, let's sit down together. Let's see what's actually in this place. And we come up with some cool things that I would never have come up with. But now every time they go to this city, they know, oh, this shopkeeper is always in there, or this one doesn't like me because I wrote it in the history that we got into a fight, you know, like years ago or whatever. So it just creates these really cool dynamics that are baked into that city from the get-go. And that just kind of helps with your world building and your role play and stuff like that. So, yeah, if anyone else does that and I'm not unique, then tell me, and that's cool, and congratulations.
You do that too? Yeah, that's awesome.
Right before, I knew we got our first question over here. I just want to give a shout-out, though, because you mentioned Incarnate, and I love Incarnate. It is awesome for making your maps and homebrew content. I have one up here that I plan to probably even a reference at some point. And it is such a great resource for your homebrew content and making all kinds of things from general regional maps to combat maps. And general, I also use it to make just backdrops and imagery to kind of illustrate to my players where they're going or what they see. And I will say they're also just a fantastic company. I've worked with them a few times, and it's only $25 for an annual subscription for the whole year, just $25. And if you want to, and one of the reasons I know they're a good company is because I partner with them, and if you use the promotion code INKGM, you get 7 days for free. I don't get anything from it. What's great, though, is that they specifically were like, it's no commitment. So at the end of 7 days, it's not like you're going to automatically be billed for the $25, which I think is always such a trap. And Incarnate's like, no, absolutely. We just want people to get an experience, and if they like it, then they'll come back and do it. So highly recommend. But yes, our first question right over here. I saw you had your hand up earlier.
I have a certain need to write, I'm trying to write just in general. And like, I'm trying to create a very complicated work, like that asks you all few stands of time passing from one to the other.
And I guess my question is, do you think you're trying to school, Gel?
Do you think
it's better that the hazard? I guess two busted, really.
First, do you think it's better to have a bath rule where you can tighten the metric? Oh, the crisis of the red effect. What was that? Oh, well. Or do you think explaining that and having a few three things, having a few very well-defined events better? And what you're trying at, I imagine there's the idea phase where you have like the vague structure of something, but when you're trying to like put it down and commit to like, the city is going to be right here. I want to move down right here. How do you do that and like stick to it, I guess? Like, how do you like take idea and implanted in a stone, if that makes any sense.
Yes. So I feel particularly equipped to answer this question. The reason being is, as I mentioned with my homebrew world, Ventures After an Arcane Apocalypse, the setting is Earth on the material plane. So it's great for the players, especially who are new to D&D, because they can easily, right, we can all kind of encapsulate our own personal experience of how vast the world is. Whatever your world is, you got to think about it from the player's perspective, right? When they're starting at level one, the narrative does not revolve around them at all. And that's nothing against them. It's just simply that they do not have the reach to have access to certain knowledge, influence, and everything else. The way I look at it is I write stuff and build things in my world for the sake of it's a living world. And then let my players decide where they want to start, what they want to do. And then I just react to what they suggest that they want to do. If they want to go left, they want to go right, they want to teleport, cool. We'll pick up there. And then I just react with what they see, what they do. And then that allows me to have tons of stuff at the ready without them feeling like I'm bogging them down with a ton of lore. And then when they run into things and experience new things and learn new knowledge, it will feel really organic and reactive rather than, you know, not sandbox, but what's the other one?
Railroading.
Railroading. Yes, not railroading your players through the narrative. Does that kind of help?
I guess so. It's like I have to do this with internal being all with like, I guess it's like, right?
I guess it does definitely work like the beginning part, like where it's like they are just kind of going right now. So just sort of write the sentence like, okay, yeah, build something to
mystery happen there.
Piggy on this one.
Okay.
So I think the thing you're tracking, and it's a big issue because for us as game masters, we have multiple people that we are trying to also facilitate this world with. As a writer, it's a little different. And what I would say is, when you write, are you writing a world book or are you writing a novel?
A novel.
So you're writing through the eyes of someone, correct?
Yes.
So if that person that you're writing through the eyes of doesn't know the battle that happened in the secondary continent on the other side of the planet,
nobody cares.
We don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
You're trying to grow this story without following the path of what your clan is. And I think it's giving a lot of energy from you that you could be utilizing where you're actually looking to utilize it.
That makes sense. Thank you. That helps.
Yeah, think of like writing a source book that they can thumb through like an encyclopedia versus a novel.
Right.
from a writer's perspective, I'm thinking like writing, like how us as game masters, I think like, okay, we write a campaign, right? Yeah. At least for me, I don't fill in the middle details, right? I start when I'm writing a campaign, for example, to tie it to how you're writing a novel. It'll equate a little bit. I know that there's a beginning and there is a bad guy, not an ending. And so you are asking, how do you fill in, like, how do you know if something is built in stone? Well, unless if it's not established already, who cares? Like, so what I'm saying is, like, whatever happens in as you write the story, as it begins, if you don't already have it to begin with, right, and you want to put something in stone, as you're writing your story and something happens, that's your point where it's like, this is now in stone now.
This, point. Yeah.
This is where it is. And then it doesn't move from there. But you don't write the ending to it. You just have a situation that you know is at the end of it already, and you fill in the middle as it naturally progresses, and the ending is whatever happens because of those situations.
And we can talk more after.
Yeah, for sure.
But I saw you had your hand up down here on the front.
Yeah, thanks. Hi. So I have a game that's been running for about 6 years. It's Homebrew. And the reason why I say 6 years is because...
Congrats.
Thank you. Before I started my game, I made this whole pig city, and I had all this lore, and I fletched everything out, and I didn't use like 90% of it. Mm-hmm. So, because it just never happened. Mm-hmm. And so... And I spent, I had announced pretty far before that I was going to do the game for some of my friends. And then, so I had like 2 months to prepare. Spent all this time, did use 90% of it still in 6 years. That's why I say 6 years. So I'm going to use a month away. So this is my question and comment. I found personally, I got this advice at one point. I found personally what worked for me is to, because I wasn't using all this, is to build strong, memorable NPCs and then build the world around that. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I have NPC and I kind of built the world to kind of fit her. I went around that because I found that my players care way more about the NPCs and all this background lore that they're really not going to necessarily... I still have it, but they're really not necessarily going to resonate with them as much. So I wondered your opinion and thoughts on that, and then building around NPCs. And secondly, do you build, you know, in advance from the beginning, or have you kind of fleshed it out as you go?
Excellent. Excellent question. I don't want to kick it off because okay. I don't want to take the platform.
I love that. I think that's fantastic. Building memorable NPCs is always super important. Super important. I think it also, like you were asking, how important is it for NPCs, right? Like those NPCs, those are the ones that your players talk to. So those are the ones that you want to at least have some sort of like knowledge of what their background is, what their history is, at least for the ones that they're going to continue to get, like continually talk to all the time. I had a thought and then I didn't, and it left me. But I know.
Ooh,
I
was
it's coming back because I had something. And
yeah.
Can I have a thought to that?
Yeah, sure.
What I meant to say probably was to you clearly was that my players I found resonate a lot more with memorable NPCs than they do with like tons and tons of lore and background that I've built. So that's why I kind of focus on that and the build around that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they have their most memorable moments. And that's what I was wondering if you guys have experienced that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to start by saying I have a book that I recommend anybody who's a game master who is running into this problem, because as a young game master, a lot of times we build thousands and thousands of pages of lore, and we're like, yes, this is what I'm excited about, this is everything I enjoy. And then your players say, well, but I want to go this way. It's like, oh no, what happened? I no longer have, no, all this is just lost. No, first off, it's not lost. Second off, you're thinking about the game the wrong way. And the reason I say that is because you're reactively thinking about a game that is not a reactive game, it's proactive. So start before you start building. And with that, I do not get sponsored by this, but I literally at every single panel reference this book. It's called The Game Master's Handbook to Proactive Roleplaying. And it takes you, starting at session zero, your players are automatically a part of the world. Because if they're not, and you're throwing them into a world, they're not going to get as excited about it, and then you're not going to get the lore you're looking for and the fun you're having out of it. With that being said, you can always reskin things. If you're, and this took a long time for me to learn this, you are the one that knows everything, not your players. Please use that to your advantage, because sometimes you're like, yes, but the story needs to go this way. Well, if you're in the woods and you go left or right, for some reason you always end back at that spot that you need the players to go to, even though they were the one that made that decision. So you didn't railroad them, you just followed their path to where you needed to be to keep the story moving forward.
To keep it into the NPC world, there was a character that you have, actually, Charlie, the Jackal.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring this up is because this character, your players know the second you start describing him what this is. And this is, I want you to kind of like talk about what the Jackal is, because it's exactly what you're describing, how your players relate to NPCs more than a world. So, yeah.
So, yes, I will end with the Jackal to finish a previous thought with what you're talking about. One thing that I highly recommend is when you're world building, build a world that you love with the expectation that your players may not uncover or learn certain aspects of it until session 100 or 1000. And that's okay, because it's going to make that moment so gratifying. And that's one of the other tips I can give for game masters is have patience, because I promise you, if let your players discover the lore, discover the secrets, and discover the nuances, because when they do, they're going to be like, oh my gosh. We've all had that moment watching a movie or reading a book, and there's a certain tell or reaction or a word that's used that the first time you didn't have the context to appreciate it for what it was. And the second or third time you watch it, you're like, this changes everything. It's going to be that same way for your players too when they get to that part. And absolutely, you can reuse different aspects of it, other things, reskin it. Highly recommend that. But ultimately, the other thing too is with all of that lore, another way to also think about it too is less that it is lore about these inanimate objects, but rather part of a story of an NPC, you know? If your town, your city is entirely hydroelectric power, well, I bet there was an NPC that inspired that and was a big advocate for that versus coal power. And, you know, perhaps that means, oh, well, probably because they were a dwarf and they didn't want to desecrate the mountains because they were very sacred to their heritage. And so therefore they're like, let's do hydroelectric. That's readily available in this area. So any type of lore you can easily make into the history of an NPC that nobody's ever heard of. But for instance, so Incarnate, I love Incarnate. I make maps on them and everything. And one of the things I like to do with my maps is if it's a big city or settlement, that there's usually a chief cartographer that holds the license or patent over that map in that area. And so I always like to sign it with something or some kind of signatory. And then that's just subtle things to talk about the history and explore different aspects of it that are so simple, but will make your players feel so much more like this is a lived in real world. And as for the Jackal, yes. So Jackal, a little bit about him. He's actually in this this settlement.
You
just
need that. Kingdom, and you point where it's at, and then one be Vanna White.
So the Kingdom of Peace, otherwise known as in Arabic, Mahaban al-Salat, which is now the capital city. That's how it started, but now it's a whole big place, and now it's a kingdom rather than a city. But ultimately, there's a king. You block all of this out of your knowledge. He's just recently began to play one of my campaigns. And he has an arch paladin as part of his court for the king. And that arch paladin is also known as the Jackal. Simply put, because he is ferocious, he is not nice, but at a distance, he can be fun. But he has a very canny ability to go invisible and slit people's throats from behind. But he's peppled it. So he does that with a smite and deals a lot of damage. It's awesome. You can easily invoke, with that being said, with homebrewing, any type of name, any type of legend that you can create. It can be a sentence or it can be a page. And those simple things can trigger a whole war or invoke whole reactions or responses about the personality of an NPC.
Can we get your question?
Yeah. Yes.
Awesome. No worries.
We'll try to keep our answers quicker, too.
I don't know who was up first. I'm so sorry. Here, we'll go with you.
I have a question on how you all manage, like, the technical aspects of homebrew the world, like homebrewing a stat plots or homebrewing how ready. Is that something that I handle, show, or my handbrew?
You have something?
Yeah. I use D&D Beyond for pretty much everything. If I'm using a monster stat block, you can create your own stat blocks. You can start from, if you have an idea for a monster, like most of my things are homebrewed or other third party content. But like, say you're doing like a bandit fight, right? You're level one, you're going into a bandit fight, but everyone knows a bandit, 12 HP, 13 AC, whatever, right? Okay. You know,
why is that it?
Because they're wearing leather armor. Okay. but everyone knows that, right? That those stats could be very wrong. I'm just pulling things out of my butt, right? But you know what I'm saying. But you can change things on D&D Beyond with, like, you can do a modify character based off of a bandit stat block, and then you could change things. So now suddenly you have the homebrewed version of a bandit that might have something different that your players aren't expecting, so they can't metagame. And that's what I do. The other thing, too, is I use Google Docs, and I just write whatever session I'm on, and I just start writing. And sometimes my stat blocks looks like a name, their AC, basic stats about them, and I'll be honest, sometimes I just make it up as I go. So,
and that's okay.
Yeah.
One of the things I will say to streamline and make stat blocks easier is also you can easily do it, like you said, D&D Beyond. If you don't have the access to that, it's too much, you can easily do it on paper.
Yeah.
The other thing that you have to remember is with the monster stat blocks, you only have to build what's relevant to your characters. So if none of your characters are casting any type of spells that has a charisma saving throw, you don't have to worry about the charisma saving throw stat for that monster or NPC. And same thing with other aspects. You know, there are a lot of stats on stat blocks that are published out there, and that's simply because they don't know where that monster is going or NPC is going to encounter and what they'll need. You do, though. So you can streamline it and make it super fast. Another thing I'll do is use inspiration from similar monsters and stuff. So if you're homebrewing yours, there's probably one that's out there that's kind of similar to it that you can use as a skeleton and scale back and scale forward different aspects and combine things, too. One thing that will eventually be in mind, so Adventures After Arcane Apocalypse will come to a Kickstarter near you next year. Manifesting that. One of the things that I will have in there and talk about more is to make your homebrew world feel, again, more lived in and more personal to your players. Think about the biome and the area that your players are fighting in a certain place, and think about what monster or creature would become the top of the food chain there. And from there, you can make that the apex beholder. And now all of a sudden, you get to reflavor and reskin a beholder as something even more terrifying and crazier. Why did this one become the apex? Perhaps it was born with two additional eye stalks, and therefore it gets additional rays and make up, you know, and you decide what kind of rays those are. Or perhaps because it has so many eye stalks, it gets to do all of its attacks with advantage. Go nuts. Go crazy.
You know, or the known one, you know, shove a horn of Orcus on top of his head.
Go over there.
homebrew, for me, and I'm going to say this, and it's not wrong, but you're never going to get it right. Mm-hmm. There's not really a way to get it right. But at the same time, your goal is to challenge your players. Your goal is to make it memorable, and your goal is to show them something different. If my players don't know that the guy over there has only 12 HP and he doesn't die at 12 HP, and they're like, well, what happened? You don't know that. How do you know what his HP is? It's the same thing. It's the same reason why when we do encounters, the goal is to invoke an emotion and enjoy in an enjoyment moment during the game. So you can cut games, you can cut encounters shorter, or you can make encounters longer if you're trying to push this story in a way that you see is not only enjoyable for yourself, but also for your players. So I'm hoping that kind of helps a little bit.
And one other thing I'll add on about, because I talked about monster stats, NPC stats. I highly recommend D&D Beyond if you don't use it. Even if you're not using it for, even if your game doesn't have D&D mechanics, you can still get a free account. And I think it's like with the free account, you can have up to 20 characters built on there. But you can, you know,
it's like right off real quick, so I know that one by heart.
But what's really great about it is I love using that to build some of my NPCs, so I can easily go back and just kind of it creates some level of organization. And especially if you're doing different mechanics, it does have a tool in there. Almost every single section you can customize and add different notes and details. So if you know, like, okay, I'm not using 5th edition mechanics, I'm using Pathfinder, you can customize certain things and add in there, okay, this is the dice that I need, you know, what I need to roll for this. This is how this will be done without those mechanics. But it creates it in a really nice flow-through way for you to access, because at the end of the day, your NPCs are players too. They're just all being played by you. So it gives me a good way to kind of encapsulate and think about those NPCs just as real as I do when I look at my character, my players' characters.
What other question?
Yeah.
What's one in the back?
Do any of you use AI in your creation process, or write it useful enough, or do you expect a process?
Excellent question. Anybody?
I can start, yeah. Yep. I was hesitant to bring this up, actually, because
this is
like
dangerous.
This is a dangerous topic here, and I'll start it since it's not out of my normal to stir some uneasy waters anyways. Yes, I do, but not for the big picture things. The way that I do things, and I was hesitant to use this as an example of good world building because I found it actually is helpful. But it's very, you can get out of hand with it very quickly. What I'll do to keep it short, because this is a whole topic on itself, I'll have a big picture idea. Say, let's take a 4-room dungeon, for example, right? I know dungeon room A is a trap, dungeon room B is a puzzle, C is a environment killer type thing for your players, 4 is your boss room, right? I'm going to fill the majority of the details myself. With everything, I'm going to go to AI like ChatGPT to fill the random BS that's in the room. Things that I don't need to think about, right? What's in the chest? 27 pieces of gold, a piece of cloth, cool. The things I don't want to think about, I don't want to figure out. Also, I'll use it real quick again. If I have an idea for a puzzle, I'm a musician professionally. I do audio for a living. I don't think like that. I'll be like, hey, I have an idea for a puzzle. Can you give me some mechanics, right? And then I'll take the mechanics, and if it works, it works, and I'll throw the lore in to make it seem legit. So, short answer, yes, but sparingly.
So for AI, I don't use it except in one circumstance, and that's just personal preference. Not here to say that it's right or wrong, no matter, you know, how you feel. For me personally, I don't like to use it, and again, like you said, it can be a whole thing. The one aspect I will use it as, and that is because sometimes I'm running multiple games or doing different things, and I still have, like, this is not what I do for a living. This is what I do in all my time outside of my 9-to-5, which is some weeks, an 80-week thing. But one of the things that I will do sometimes, if I have a session zero and I'm bringing in a new player to the table, and, you know, I'm trying to, you know, illustrate or orchestrate some things to them real quick, I have found and used it a couple of times to generate the a concept of an NPC that they might know from their backstory. If I don't have the time to go through Google Images to find artwork of a character that would be similar, or commission an artist to, if I don't have time to do that, to commission an artist and have them do something, I have found that to be helpful to kind of streamline that. But that is all based, you know, on, for me to facilitate a better player experience in a time-crunched scenario. But it's always something that I show them, and not something that I'm, like, printing and using as additional reference.
No.
It's just to be like, okay, I would love to give you one page on their aesthetics and how they look, but I can't right now. Here's roughly what you can imagine.
Imagery, yeah, I would say the same thing. The way I play AI when it comes to my games is the same way I would play going to Google Images. I'm still technically taking that no matter what, but I'm not using it for money, and I'm not using it to make any sort of product. So if it's to give my players an image, or for me better, if it's on my note sheet, it's like, oh, I've taken this character's portrait, put this in my note sheet, so now I can describe that character better because I can see who they're talking to. When it comes to ChatGPT, on the other hand, I use it for two ways. One, I do exactly what you do. I do it for my stat blocks. Because I can go in, because there is an actual mechanic built into Dungeons & Dragons, and there's other mechanics depending on the system, that says to change a character, or to change a monster from CR1 to CR3, this is what you have to do. That's an actual mathematic formula that WotC has come up with. Doesn't always work, but nothing is 100%. That's, you can literally do that, and then you tweak it to your own why. Like you were saying, bandits have 12 health, 13 AC. I need the box. Okay, bring this bandit up to a CR3 for me. Gives me all my stat adjustments, and I go, oh, okay. Now I can play, because now I can say, I also need to add a ring to him so that he has a little bit of extra with this. I can give him a flaming sword because he found one in the box a couple of years ago. Whatever the answer is. And the other one I use it for is because I do a lot of live play. I will literally take my transcript from my game that night and I pull it to a document and I upload it to a personal version of ChatGPT that I have that just keeps my stuff to it, and I say, please organize this for me based on what the players did, because we might only play every other week. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna forget things, and it allows me to organize it that way.
That's a really good idea.
Oh yeah, it's super
useful. Oh my god, that's a great idea.
And the mechanic you're talking about, you can find it in the Dungeon Master's manual.
Yeah,
it's like,
I don't have time to do all that.
No. He's right. It doesn't scale perfectly, but it does help in some circumstances if you need to quickly and change something, and it gives you like an algorithm of like, all right, if you're going to CR10, multiply by this amount, that hit points and saves and stuff like that.
Let's take some questions over here. We've taken a lot over here. Let's take some over here.
we can
wait. We found success with building NPC, so in my mind, right, thinking of like connection interaction between them and building like Corona, like a group of aristocrats, all like a say, for the purpose of one, getting that window into your world, add that culture piece to Black Oaks and three, maybe like quests and things like that. Have you found success and making them feel realistic?
Think of them as additional players at the table. That's one of the reasons, like I said, I love D&D Beyond, because I can make the stat blocks and everything, and it makes them feel more than just a two-dimensional exposition on a piece of paper. But think about, you know, okay, if these were players, you know, these NPCs, if they were players at my table, how would they react? What would be their motivations? What would be their fears? What would be their excitement? What would be temptations for them? And also remember that each of your NPCs, right, they answer to themselves at the end of the day. And you are just documenting it. And so kind of think about, that's one of the ways to make it feel more genuine and to create plots that, you know, I wouldn't innately think of off the top of my head. I think of, okay, let's imagine, you know, three aristocrats who are fed up with the current power structure, right? And they've come together enough to say, okay, us three, we have an issue with the current power structure. Adam at BirdQuest. Love you, Adam. You know, we want to run BirdQuest now. However, there can only be one Adam, right? So we go through our motions and everything else of how we're going that position and bring it down to create that power vacuum. But if only one of us can go, what are each of their individual motivations? And then based on their individual experiences, and that's where I like to think of like class and subclass for those NPCs, what would be their inclinations and what would they draw from to get that? And from there, they're going to have their own individual decisions that they make that are going to have their own consequences and reactions as well. And those can easily be separate fault lines and everything else, which will extend to other NPCs and help flesh out the organization as that's cropped up and go into other aspects and ripples throughout the society that are only going to happen because, you know, Jeff is a bard, so therefore, you know, he's going to rely a lot more on his bardly connections in the city. And that's going to change his buy for the power vacuum to take the leadership over differently than our paladin over here, who's going to use his connections at the church or the synagogue or, you know. So,
what tools do you use to organize that other than the Beyond?
Google Docs, yeah. Honestly. Google Docs. It's not great. I say, honestly, I have bad ADHD. Use whatever works for you. If it's different notes in your phone, different notebooks to organize it, whatever is accessible for you.
I'll give them some tools though.
There's a bunch of stuff out there, but ultimately, definitely go for what's most accessible for you.
You could, like, World Anvil is also really good too. You can use World Anvil. OneNote is good.
Yes.
For different things in the sky. And I think I just actually started using Google Docs as well, and there's like tab functions on it now, so you can actually organize your Google Docs like a OneNote now, which is really nice. Something real quick that I use as well for, you said how you make NPCs feel alive and like how they make them feel real. I'm a real big fan of the runaway NPC. So you're in a combat, right? And your NPC, not all NPCs have to die, guys.
Nope.
All right? I'm a big fan of the runaway. So then it ensues a chase, but if they get away for real, now suddenly that NPC might have that scar from the rogue that got a cool, you know, stab on their face, and now that NPC's got a scar. And the next time they see him, you know, like, he's gunning for the rogue specifically. Like, that's their opener. You know, and you just kind of get to build those characters naturally, which I'll be honest, I kind of took that from Shadow of Mordor with the... there we go. We got that one. Yeah, with the rival system.
Steal everything.
So, yeah, tell me. Good GMs create, great GMs steal. You can hear that on our podcast, too.
So two things. How do I organize it? I've definitely used Google Docs and OneNote for years. Mm-hmm. The one that is kind of starting to, there's two other additional ones that I definitely want to announce though, because if you're willing to have a little bit of a payment, it goes a long way. Obsidian, I think, is still free though. So Obsidian is a solid one. And that one you can link everything. It's ridiculous how easy it is to link everything. The other one is Notion. Notion, I think, has a small
small fee, yearly fee, but you can break everything down into what looks like post-it notes. So then you can just pull and move and change, and it's fantastic. But you can pay for it, so there's that. To make the NPCs feel alive, though, pick something that makes them different. Maybe it's their personality, maybe it's a physicality, maybe it's something that just is off about that character, because that's going to make it feel like I'm not playing, well, NPC 1 is talking to NPC 2, who's talking to NPC 3, but they all sound, feel, and act exactly the same. And that goes, same book that I just talked about, they have a whole series. One is literally called The Game Book, or Game Master's Book of Random NPCs.
It's great.
And they'll break it down to the point where it says, what's their catchphrase?
So, BESR.
What's that?
What was the book?
Game Master's Book of Random NPCs. But yeah, like every NPC on there has a catchphrase. And that seems to just put you in a different mindset each time. So, yeah.
And you can buy that at like Target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like whole series.
All of those books, there's like eight of them now in that series. Yeah. There's like Book of Random Traps, Book of Random
That's a good
Encounters.
Book. The Random Trap and Playbook book is so good.
I have the Trap and the NPC, and they're amazing. Yeah. What are the questions we got?
I think you also
had your hand up, right?
How do you manage when your players ask the inevitable question of something you didn't create in your war? Since they're going to ask. Uh-huh. Everything.
Yeah.
The Random Joe.
Yep.
Collaborative storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really depends how you want to run it and what your players like, right? I've been very fortunate to run a ton of different games with a ton of different players. And some groups and some players like to be put on the spot and have that direct input. Some of them are like, No. I want to be in my space, in my bubble, and that is it. And that's fine. But tailor it to your group, because it's collaborative storytelling, right? This is a group project at the end of the day. And allow that input and feed off of that input and feed off of that reaction, too. So if you are improvising in the moment, it's perfectly okay just because they ask a question doesn't mean that they get the answer to the question as the other guy. You can share as little or as much as you want about it, and that's okay. And sometimes that can be, it's like, oh, well, at the end of the day, hey guys, we're all human. This is a really cool thing, and I want to do this justice. Let me revisit it. That's okay too.
Yeah, I was going to say something around the line is similar with that. Like, so say you're in your session, right, and they ask the bartender some obscure question, some obscure thing that you have never thought about for your game, right? Make it up on the spot. And if you have some form of note-taking, whatever lore, whatever description, whatever thing you spit out of your mouth, write it down.
Yep.
And now that is sacred now. That is gospel, right? And you just... boom, right there. Not only does that increase your ability to improv, for one thing, but two, you just created more lore in your world right there, right off the spot. And if you make a decision, I was literally about to say this, like, we've all done this, or at least I hope you did. If you haven't, you will. You come up with a decision about this particular NPC that they asked about for some world-building stuff or some lore, some question, and you make a decision on what they look like or sound like or the lore that you did, and... a week goes by and you go to your next session like, that was really stupid. Why did I say that?
And that's the one they cling to, too. Exactly. That's the downfall.
Here's the thing. It's a game, okay? No one's going to die without this, okay? So like, you talk to your, if you think that lore is completely stupid, on the site, you can talk to your team and be like, can we maybe change the accent on this particular character? Or maybe they didn't remember that event as well as they thought they did. They were drunk that night when they told you about that, you know? And so it's like you have these, I think we'd all get stuck in these confinements of, this is why I don't like modules. This is why I like homebrew, because modules, we all get stuck in these parameters of where these characters have to live. Bob. Like, don't forget, like, this is a world, it changes, people change, there's things that you can do differently for every character. So make it up on the spot, write it down, change it if you need to. That's my answer for you.
I will also add real quick, just the idea of, like, your players ask a question to an NPC, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. right? That's the scenario. You could very just simply, like I said, if you haven't thought about it, perhaps that's just part of the narrative of that NPC as well.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Schmo at the bar doesn't know about that history of the city simply because this is all he does, you know? And then you can think about that, like, okay, does he do it as a passion or does he do it out of necessity? And that can help make that NPC right there in that moment feel fleshed out and more real without also making your players feel like you're shutting them down and being like, nope, not going to talk about that. No, we're not. They did ask a different question. No.
Two tidbits on that. First one, make your players do it. It's so much fun. They go, oh, hey, so about this. So quick story on this. I do a one game is completely improv. We do all of my friends from the local friends. We all come over. It's like, hey, we're not prepping this game at all. I'm like, okay, cool. The downfall is they all know that at one point within the night, they will be answering a question that they aren't ready for. And it's so much fun to watch because they do everything that I do. Go, hold on. Let me think through this. Key point. You found a bottle floating in the water. There's a note on it. He looked at me and he goes, what does it say? I go, roll me a history check. He rolled high enough. I said, what does it say? And he, I mean, deer in headlights look. It was great. And then he made up that lore on the spot. And it was like, oh, look, now we're collaborative. Now we're rolling. And you can do that for names. You can do that for encounters. Have fun with it. If you're not on a stage, this is you and your friends. You're never going, you're the only ones enjoying it. So enjoy it. Doesn't matter who it is. The second thing is, and I'm going to fight you both on this, modules are fantastic. I do both. That's the reason I say that. I've been running a live play for almost 2 years now in Icewind Dale, which is a known module.
It's okay, babe.
Mind you, I have done so much in that module that they're like, did that really happen? I was like, no, it didn't. But it did, because it's my module. It's not theirs.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It did now, exactly.
It did now.
Exactly.
I mean, I've killed off one of the main Dwargar bosses. His son is 10 times more terrible than he is. I've created the Shardalin dragon to be about 4 times the size it originally was. I mean, we have what we call the Heroes of Icewind Dale, which is friends coming in to play with us. And every character that comes in not only is an NPC at one point, but they've now fleshed out a character that is part of the world.
UFO's Pontos don't have R.A. Salvatore back you, their story. So.
True. Well, actually, kind of.
I will say, in that region, world, yeah, sure, not at least.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But another one I will tell you that I've done with as well, and sadly, over the last edition or two, Arya Salvatore has kind of lived in Dungeons & Dragons for a minute, right? The Sword Coast. Mm-hmm. I've ran Tyranny of Dragon, I think, 3 different times, and I've had a different scenario happen every single time, because all I'm working with, at least a module, is a setting, some key NPCs, and that's about it. Everything else is a homebrew, in my opinion, no matter what. I'm just using the skeleton.
That's fair. Some other questions?
So we have 3 minutes, so this is going to be our last question.
Yeah.
However,
maybe take one or two.
I will say
make
this.
Make it quick.
We are, Jeff and I, we're going to be here till like 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So more than welcome to come and we'll
Let's
chat
talk.
In the hallway and hang out,
get together,
answer
hang
more
out.
Questions. Totally fine.
Yeah.
But.
Area, and we have really developed this like culture is a school, like you don't want to only confuse the players with such vexes and things that they would get unless they know this. How do you go about introducing that out in this county?
So one of the things that I will do is I love doing that, is creating, you know, what is the colloquially known phrases in a town or anything that's specific only to that. And I just love to just casually just use it when they talk with an NPC. And then when the players at the table are like,
what did he say?
some kind of like Gen Z slang, I don't know. instead, it's just like, it's like, oh, well, yeah, you don't know. You can either ask about it, you can do a history check, and we can drop it that way. Or how much do the players care about it and want to learn and be more about it? Use it how you like. And again, it's collaborative storytelling. Your players may not want to engage with it, and maybe they do. But yeah, just as long as you guys are the biggest thing, guys, if everybody's having fun at the table, that's all that matters.
That's the way to
That's how you win.
That's the way to do. So,
to answer what you're saying, like, how do you not overwhelm them? Because cities, there's a lot of people. And so there's a lot of stress, like, okay, how do I introduce them one at a time? If you think about a lot of, like, let's take a fantasy setting. If they go into a town for the first time, what's typically in the front of a town? A guard, right? So then you can begin to introduce NPCs one at a time, in a sense, where they meet the guard first. The guard tells them, hey, here's kind of the general area. Are you foe, friend? What are you doing here? Then you can get that, like, okay, you're a friend. Okay, well, you can go meet Israela over in the town, the tavern, right? Israela, and then she'll be able to, you gave them a little nugget now to go to the bar, right, to the town. And then Israela, the barkeep, can then tell you about Samwise, the blacksmith. And you can just begin to drop these little things, and you're not overwhelming them, but you're introducing them to the key NPCs of the city. Hope that helps.
Yeah. That being said, we'll be out in the hallway for any more questions. We're going to wrap up so they can get ready for the next panel. Thank you guys.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And make sure you spread the word about BirdQuest. It's such a great con. We're so excited to see it grow. This is my second year at it.
Thanks.
So I hope you guys come back. Yep, your second year as well.
My first time.
First time over here. So please come back. Thank you again. There's some stickers up front if anybody wants to get some. Also, we have a free set of dice. If anybody wants to come up here, first person to roll a nat 20 with a d20 gets to keep the glow-in-the-dark set of dice. But again, thank you, everybody. We'll see you in the hallway if anybody has more questions.